Hey, what's up, everyone? I'm Sarah.
I'm Liz.
And this is the It's Fine, I'm Fine podcast.
Hello, Sarah. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. So we recorded a really cool episode today with Limor Weinstein. She's someone we know from the Jewish Upper East Side community, which is cool. Even though we're not there, we're still connecting with those folks. Interestingly, Limor is a therapist, which, Sarah, I don't know if you want to kind of give like a more detailed introduction.
Yeah. So today we have Limor Weinstein on the podcast, who she grew up in Israel. She left her home from her parents when she was just 12 years old to live in a communal living community called a kibbutz in Israel. And when she was 20, she came to the U.S. And then she studied mental health counseling and got various different studies in mental health. And over the years has worked in various different places. And then now she has her own wellness center on the Upper East Side. But she has so much experience in mental health. She has experience with eating disorder recovery. And not only from studying it, but she experienced a lot of these things herself. So she touches on that, and she touches on how she went from struggling with these issues to overcoming them and then being able to help others, which was really cool. She's really inspiring and really amazing. Seems like such a smart person. And so we really enjoyed speaking with her.
Yeah. I thought that our interview with her was incredibly refreshing, because like having gone through an eating disorder myself, it's really not like glamorous, and you just go in and talk and then all of a sudden like you end up, you know, fine with your eating. Like it's actually very hard, and you have to do hard things in order to get better. And so that's like a very good textbook example of how therapy can be challenging. And she doesn't just do work with people with eating disorders, but I thought, you know, you'll kind of hear her philosophy on therapy and how that's very in line, I think, with her own experiences. And I thought it was just a really unique way of, like she has a unique approach. And I thought it's great exposure for people who don't know a lot about therapy or who do and just want to learn about something different. So I thought it was a great, great interview. And then of course, in line with our topic for today, but with our topics always, we want to remind you all about our partner BetterHelp, who they are a virtual therapy service. So you can schedule sessions with counselors. You can also text them throughout the app, which is pretty cool. Another thing that Limor kind of mentions in the episode is being able to match with someone who, you know, would be able to do the best work with you. And BetterHelp is a great tool for that, because they allow you to speak with a couple different people before committing. Or even if you've committed to a therapist, you're able to switch at no additional cost, which I think is one of the great things. And one of the actual hindrances to seeing people in person is it can be hard to find a bunch of different people. So we do have a 10% off code if you just go to betterhelp.com/itsfine. That's betterhelp.com/itsfine. 10% off your first month of service. Always happy to partner with them, and happy to keep reminding you all that we work with them.
Love it.
So let's get into the peaks in the pit, shall we? I can go first.
Yeah, please do.
I thought about this. So my pit has been, I've been experiencing a little bit of like physical anxiety, which, you know, I always have a little bit of it, but it's sort of that thing of like, I'm feeling the physical stuff first. And then I'm like, what's happening here? Which can be even scarier sometimes, because you're like, I'm not even like actually anxious about anything, but my body is. And I know that that's something that like even Sarah, you experienced when you talked about your first encounter with anxiety, like you were kind of just out of breath a lot and you were like, what is happening here? And obviously like, don't get me started on the COVID aspect of being out of breath, because that's like a whole other anxiety, but it's not like so much being out of breath. It's like, I forget to breathe regularly. And then all of a sudden I'm like,
yep.
And then I'm fine. But it's just something to be mindful of. And it's, you know, every day is like a new challenge. That's kind of what Limor talked about in this episode, is like being able to put in work is like confronting new challenges. So that's just something that I'll have to be mindful of. And then my peak was today. I did a journaling class, which was really cool. I've shared a little bit about it on my Instagram. And of course, if anyone's like interested in doing it, feel free to reach out to, you know, the podcast Instagram or to me. But it was just awesome. It was like 2 hours led by a girl. I think she's your age, Sarah. I think she's like 25.
That's cool.
She graduated from Penn State, and she led a Zoom of 11 women. Wow. And she gave us 5 prompts. It was really, really cool. That's like, really I would cool. highly recommend it. It was $20 and like 2 hours. And she does all types of different sessions.
2 hours?
Like, it's really cool. 2 hours, yeah.
Wow, that's really cool. It's like a class.
Yeah, it was a class. And like, she gave us prompts, but it was also very like free form. And there was a lot of discussion, which I always like. So yeah, I would highly recommend it, just especially right now when we're all kind of like, there's so many thoughts in our heads, whether it's like a journaling class with this girl I saw, or if it's journaling in general. It's definitely something I'm trying to get more into. So that was the peak, because it was a good like self-reflection moment.
Love that. And actually, during our episode, Limor talked about when she was journaling, and I thought of you and your journaling class today. And I'm sure you thought of you and your journaling class today.
Yeah. Okay, Sarah, how about you?
Yeah, I think that I am also experiencing a lot of physical symptoms of anxiety, which can be really difficult, especially as you said, in Corona era, because it's like, well, why is my chest tight? What does this mean? But I think totally. At this point, like, we've been in quarantine for 2 months. Like, I think I've been able to really like pinpoint when it's anxiety and when I'm like not feeling well. And every single time it's been anxiety. But yeah, I think that for me, my pit of my week is that, I mean, this is a good thing, but I'm like, you'll hear about this in our episode today, but like, I'm really like in the heat of like doing the work that I'm learning in therapy, like applying the work. Yeah. And my therapist now, she really is not sitting here being like, all right, like, let's just talk it out. She's like, no, like, how can we actually apply the work we're doing in here to your everyday life? And that's kind of why I got like passionate about it in this episode, is because like, I feel like I'm currently like trying to apply what I'm doing in therapy to my everyday life. But like, first of all, that's hard enough as it is. Second of all, I'm not even leaving my apartment. So it's kind of just like sitting here, especially in COVID era. It's just like, it's a lot of sitting around with your thoughts. So there's really like there's not much distraction. So I'm really like applying this work that I'm doing in therapy every second of every day, because I'm just sitting here. So I like have to be applying. I don't know if that makes sense, but basically like
totally
trying to like combat anxiety and like anxious thoughts and spiraling. And what I tend to do, just to be vulnerable for a sec with my anxiety, but what I tend to do is create these like full stories in my head of like what's going on. And like, because stories equates to an answer, and I want answers because I get anxious about uncertain situations. So when I'm uncertain about things, which could be like a billion different things, I want to create stories in my head, because at least, although they're fake stories, it's an answer to what I don't know. And so right now in therapy, I'm really working on just like not engaging the stories and like not spiraling into different scenarios. Because there's no point in doing that, because those stories are not what's happening. They're just stories. Mm-hmm. So that's currently what I'm working on. And it's really hard. It's really, really hard work. But on the other hand, I'm like proud of myself for putting in the work, even though I'm not getting a result right away, but hopefully in 12 to 38 weeks, as Limor says, I'll see results. So yeah. And then my peak of the week was I finished, this like awesome show called Fauda, and it, like, I can't believe that's my peak, is like a show on Netflix, but it honestly was just so captivating, and I can't even like, it's all I want to do is talk about it. I've FaceTimed like 8 different people who have seen it just so I can talk to someone new about their thoughts on the ending. So I'm kind of
actually think there.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I actually think like it's good that you feel so good about a show, because while it's so different from what you may have been excited about 6 weeks ago, or like, sorry, no, like at this point, 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember I used to watch shows and just like, I wasn't even watching them. Right. I was just like putting something on in the background. So I actually think that yes, like, is TV the most, like the biggest accomplishment for ourselves in our lives? Maybe not, but I do think there's something to be said about watching something or reading something and doing it like with your whole, like your full attention, and getting really excited about it. Like, we did take watching shows for granted, and now it's like one of the things that we have consistently. Right. So
it's like a highlight.
I think that that's good that you were like, exactly. Yeah. It's good that you were like excited about it and attentive and like, you know,
right. And an added layer is that I've been watching it in Hebrew. So I really had to pay attention because I don't speak Hebrew. So I had to read the English subtitles and I'm like, my eyes are glued to the screen as opposed to like, usually when I watch TV, there's like Instagram and TikToks and yeah. So
exactly.
Yeah.
I think that's something to be proud of. And okay. In speaking of you know, a show in Hebrew, again, we have this episode with Lee Moore. She's awesome and she has a really unique story. So mm-hmm. Yeah, we hope you enjoy.
Enjoy.
Guys, how are you?
How are you? Today on the podcast, we have Lee Moore. Is that how you say your name, Lee Moore?
Yes, yes.
Lee Moore Weinstein, who I'll let you talk more about your experience and where you came from, but you have a lot of experience in mental health counseling and you currently live in New York City. And so we're really excited to speak more about your experiences and your story and just learn more about you. So to kick it off, why don't you tell us, like, first, you were born in Israel and you were in the army. So I would love to hear about that. I just finished FAUDA and Liz just started FAUDA.
Right. It's like, oh, I love FAUDA. Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's a part of it, of course. Yeah. So I was born in Israel and served in the Israeli army from age 18 to 20. I was a commander and then got involved actually with mental health while I was in the army. And kind of serving as a social worker and helping recruit people who didn't want to go to the army because they had mental health issues to serve in the Israeli army, because it is a very important, you know, step in everyone's life if you live there. And, it is also very empowering. So, and I did that. And then I wanted to be a doctor, but I didn't really speak English. So I thought that maybe coming to the U.S. When I was 20 will help with my acquiring the English language skills, which now I speak English. But I ended up meeting my husband about a year later. And 24 years later, I'm still here.
Wow.
Yes.
That's wonderful.
We would also love to hear more about, like, Were you born and raised on a kibbutz?
Yeah, so I was born in Jaffa, which is like a very, you know, it's a suburbs of Tel Aviv, and it's a very poor neighborhood, and I had to leave home when I was 12 to live in a kibbutz on my own. Actually, my older sister is the first person to. I have two sisters and a little brother, and we were very poor, and we also had a lot of issues in my family, a lot of dysfunctional issues. And so my older sister had to leave to a kibbutz when she was 12. And then a year later, I left to a different kibbutz, which was not a good decision, but that was the decision back then. And then my little sister left to another kibbutz 2 years later. So we were three of us with different families in different kibbutz. So only when I was 12 that happened.
Wow. Lee Moore, would you mind elaborating, because we probably have some listeners who aren't as familiar with like Israeli culture, so might not even know what a kibbutz is. So could you explain that for us?
Yes, of course. So it's a type of communal living, or, you know, a settlement. And it's a very unique type of living to Israel. And, you know, it was established in 1910. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because of the necessity to have, you know, people who are gathered together and are working the land and are contributing to a communal type living. So basically, it was kind of cool. And there are about 270 kibbutzim in Israel right now. Wow. But they're very different than how they used to be in the past. Like when I joined the kibbutz back in, it's like 1989 or something like that. 87, actually, trying to calculate the years. And it was very different. The kibbutz, you know, basically it doesn't matter what you do. You could be a doctor or you could be a babysitter, whatever you do, all the money goes to one place. And then everybody's getting the same amount of money and working the land and eating together. And, you know, you work since you're very young. So you acquire very good work ethics and, you know, helping and caring. I mean, that's a very, you know, vital part of living in the kibbutz.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Gotcha.
That's so interesting.
I'm also curious, you spoke a little bit about how when you were in the Israeli army, you were sort of a social worker there. But I'm sure, like, as Sarah and I can relate to sort of your New York clinical experience because we're both New York women and we see therapists, but I would like to know a little bit more about like how you were educated here or maybe in Israel. I'm not sure. Just tell us a little bit about like your background with getting into therapy.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I came here and then I got my undergraduate in psychology and then I got into a master's and PhD program at Columbia for clinical psychology. And I ended up getting my master's in clinical psychology, had three kids on the way, and then got a two-year postgraduate training in eating disorders and ended up just getting a second master's in mental health counseling.
Wow.
I like being in school and finishing like the PhD with three young kids was very challenging. So I am a licensed mental health counselor. And I, you know, I also like, I believe that, you know, in order for any therapist to help someone else, it is important that you kind of look at yourself and your experiences. And if everybody's going through challenges, you know, I think it's important to reflect on our own experiences and, you know, just kind of see, hey, I've had these challenges. Why did I have these challenges and what helped me come out of them and lead a healthier lifestyle? So, you know, I was struggling with, I mean, I was sick with eating disorders from age 14 to 24. Mm. I was anorexic and almost died actually because I was 78 pounds.
Wow.
And I was insane. It's so hard to think that this, you know, this actually was my weight. And then I was bulimic for 10 years. And, you know, and then even while, I mean, it was actually in undergraduate school where, you know, I started learning about psychology and, you know, thinking about like, wait, why did this happen to me? And, you know, it was very helpful to, you know, to just kind of go through the experience of learning and reflecting upon my own experiences. And, you know, that was a very important part, I feel like, of just being a therapist is being able to reflect on our own experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess, so just in terms of the timeline, it's interesting to me that I guess following up with like when you were on the kibbutz and then when you ended up coming to America, it seems like the eating disorder was with you for both the time in Israel mm-hmm. and your time here. And I've talked about this on our podcast a little, but I actually have experience with anorexia. I was diagnosed with it when I was 17 and then I like was in outpatient care for 4 years while I was in college. And I'm like since recovered is like the terminology that you'd use. And so it's interesting to me just because I think I only have one experience, but like it's just a hard phenomenon to wrap your head around that there are people who live completely different lives from you, but end up having very, very similar issues. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't have any clinical experience like in terms of learning about it, but I'd like to know a little bit more about it if you don't mind talking about your experience with your eating disorder, like kind of where you think it comes from and how you ended up ultimately recovering and trying to make, you know, help other people out of it.
Yeah, no, that's a very important question. And I think we all have our unique experiences and we all come from different backgrounds. And I believe that there's no one reason, you know, there's a multifactorial, you know, there's definitely a genetic component. My mom had an eating disorder. My aunt had an eating disorder. There's a lot of mental health issues in my family. And so that's definitely plays a part. And I also believe that we are born with the predisposition to have a certain disorder, right? So that's like the environment versus, you know, biology. Mm-hmm. But we are, you know, in terms of the personality, I was like the classic, you know, textbook anorexic, perfectionist, you know, like people pleaser, and, you know, just kind of like, you know, trying to always impress other people and not putting myself at the front. So, you know, I think it's just taking different factors on top of, you know, having the traumatic experience of having left home at age 12, where it is such an important age for, you know, to be in and like to not have your parents around. And, you know, I've had a lot of other experiences in the kibbutz, including, you know, like sexual assault and, you know, other forms of, you know, people that just took advantage of the fact that I was you know, on my own in the kibbutz. And, you know, I feel like there was just a lot of different, you know, kind of factors that play into account. And I never really like talked about how I was feeling because I was always taking care of everybody else. So I always came last. And, you know, it's very unfortunate, but that was the case.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. I was going to say, were you like aware of what was going on, or did you like, once you started studying mental health, is when you came to terms with like what was happening? Because I know that like when you can be in the middle of it, you might not realize like I'm struggling with this. And also you were young. So
that's a great question.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, I knew there was something wrong, right? Because I was very thin. But I feel also back then they didn't know as much as they know now. I mean, anorexia and bulimia, I mean, they knew that it was some sort of an eating disorders, but I feel they also didn't know how to treat it. So I think that was like an important, you know, thing. It's like, I got therapy, but it was the wrong type of therapy. And then, you know, I think I knew that something is wrong, like, because I was literally like binging and purging like so many times a day, you know, and when I knew something is wrong and, you know, like I was scared, like I was being scared, right? I'm not going to get pregnant. So I literally like gained the weight, but I never took care of the actual like problem and underlying issues. So I ended up moving to bulimia, which was very easy to hide. And then I kind of binged and purged through, you know, until I was 24. And it was interesting because I remember the day that I stopped binging and purging. I was in school for like, you know, a couple of years, but it was at Hunter College. And there was a dietitian who was talking about, you know, her patients and her experience with working with people with eating disorders, where they don't really, like, they live a life where they don't really express themselves truly, and they are not acting the way that they want to. So it's kind of like she was talking about the gap between how people with eating disorders, what they do and what they act and what they say versus what they actually want to. And then something clicked for me where I was like, wow, like I'm not really doing what I want to do, and I'm not living the, you know, like I'm not really being myself. Mm-hmm. Because I felt like I had to be somebody else in order for someone to love me. So I feel like that was kind of like a big point where I was, all right, there is something really big that's happening. And then I kind of looked back and reflected on like, why did it happen to me? And I have like so many diaries of, you know, myself, like since I was, I think, 10 years old, and how, you know, I was really unhappy and I was crying, and like, it was so sad. Like literally when I was in the kibbutz, like from 12 years old, I was, you know, like every night almost I went to sleep crying and like, you know, so sad and felt so sorry for myself. And, you know, I was just kind of like, wow, this must have been like, you know, really hard, like having, you know, like to live like so many years and just so sad. I was always so sad, but what everybody that knew me was like, wow, Limor is like, she's always so happy. She's so cool. Like, everybody thought I was this Miss Perfect. I was like the best student. I was like, yeah, I was doing like pre-med. I was biology. I was like the perfect child. Like I even like modeled when I was 15, you know, and I was in the newspaper, and everybody's like, wow, Limor is like so happy. And to the outside world, it looks like, you know, I was like this perfect child, but, you know, I was suffering and hurting and literally like abusing myself for so many years, which was very sad. So it was kind of interesting to, you know, to see, okay, like there was a reason why I, you know, I starved myself to death. Like I was so, you know, like if you just kind of think about the little literal form of it, I was so full of so much, right? I've had so many like horrible experiences, even in Jaffa when I grew up, or, you know, with like abuse and neglect, and like we didn't have like, you know, we didn't have money, and my dad was in jail, in and out, and my mom was just, you know, there's a lot of traumatic experiences, but I never like expressed myself. I felt so much shame and so much embarrassment of like, wow, this, was my story. And like, I can never, ever talk about it. So what I ended up happening is like, I restricted because I couldn't even like, you know, again, this is one reason that I've realized I couldn't take in anything else because I was already so full of so much. So, you know, it was interesting to kind of see like how psychology played a part into it. And, you know, as well as like the attachment and how I had a very unhealthy attachment, you know, earlier on, but there are definitely several reasons, but yeah, so it was kind of reflecting.
Sorry, when you say attachment, what do you mean by attachment?
So basically there are four main types of attachment, but if we just talk about the secure and insecure
We're very familiar with those. I just wasn't sure context of what you were referring to. Got it.
So, I mean, I, you know, kind of like reflecting when I was in school, I realized, wow, I had this very insecure attachment and, you know, like that kind of caused me to feel like, you know, like I'm not worthy. I'm not good enough. I didn't develop like the strong foundations as a lot of other people. And so, you know, that also played a part in my development of eating disorders. And, you know, the bulimia is a little bit different, but it's also related to, you know, like then I ended up taking a lot of things, but I didn't have the right skills and tools to handle, you know, like what was happening to me. Right. And I feel like that's something that I've learned in therapy. I've had like the worst therapist. I mean, I've had a couple of good ones, but I've literally learned what not to do for my therapist, because even when I was receiving therapy, like they wanted to talk about all these things that happened to me, but I wasn't ready. I was still like I needed to know how to like, you know, like what I can do to lead a life, to regulate my emotions, to control my thoughts. I needed like very basic skills. Mm-hmm. Or evidence-based techniques that what I use primarily with my patients is, you know, helping them to regulate their emotions, to redirect their thoughts, to, you know, like learn how to motivate themselves. And so, I mean, there's so many different skills in psychology and, you know, different fields, but I think a lot of therapists, especially if they don't have the knowledge of eating disorders, they do wrong. And it could be very, very, very dangerous if they, you know, if they try to treat someone without the experience.
So would you say, absolutely. Would you say that, is it like person by person, or would you say in general, it's more important to first come up with like techniques and tools that you can use immediately? And then once you start practicing those, like uncover where it may have come from? Or would you say like, because it sounds like you're saying that the first step should not be like, okay, let's talk about everything that's happened to you and then we'll treat it. It's like, first, what are the concrete tools that we can use and then later uncover what happened? Is that what you're saying?
Well, that's a very excellent question. And I think like for me, where I was in my life, it was not the right thing. And for a lot of my clients, it is not the right place to start. Mm-hmm. But what I do is basically when I reflected back on my experiences and I wrote a memoir, like when I was 21 and I thought I was like dying from bulimia because I was binging and purging all day, I came up with 100 pages of, you know, material where I literally wrote like, as I'm writing these pages, I am dying from this horrible disease that I've been struggling with for, you know, 6 years. And I literally... somehow I wrote it in English, which was very odd because I didn't speak English, but it was 100 pages of like, I think I'm dying. And I feel like I was already, so, for me personally, I was already filled with so much that if like talking about it more was not helpful. But when I did this reflection, I realized, okay, how was it that I was supposed to come out of my disorder, right? Before like even becoming a therapist. And I realized that I had to go through 5 steps in order to overcome my eating disorders. And the steps are, you know, now it's, you know, I have a workbook with about 160 pages and, you know, based on these steps. But the steps are, it's called the karma coaching. And K stands for knowledge and awareness. A is acceptance. R is releasing the past. M is making meaning. And A is authenticity. So for me personally, I needed the knowledge. I need to learn skills. I need to learn about, like, you know, like to learn just general things about what is anorexia, what is bulimia, what is happening, what are all the right skills and tools, and what is the best skill for me. And then acceptance is, you know, a lot of dialectical behavior therapy skills and mindfulness and learning to just accept certain things that I cannot change. And releasing the past is, you know, there are some psychodynamic, you know, treatments in that section. And it is important to go and look at the past, but I think it is important to know who is sitting in front of you and are they ready to do that work. And sometimes you can do this work and just like learning and talking about it, but not delving too much into the past. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there is actually a personality. You could do like a test to see like where the client is and where they can start. For example, I have someone I'm working with from England. She's been in treatments for 15 years. And what she really needed is to start with making meaning. Because for her, she knew everything already. She knew more than anyone else. But for her, it's like, why am I here? What is the point of being on this planet, right? Mm-hmm. And connecting to spirituality. And she happened to be Jewish. So like, how can we use Jewish elements to help her in her recovery and connecting to her religion? And, you know, like just there's so many different things that she did. And 8 months later, she's already almost out of her anorexia. She's actually has her own company to help people to learn how to eat mindfully now. And a lot of my clients somehow become, you know, therapists and dietitians and in the wellness world, which is very interesting. But I think it is important to know, like, you know, where you are in your process and where is a good place for you to start. And you can go back and forth. Like you can go with like getting the skills and going in the past. But I think it takes a lot of experience to know, you know, where is the right place to be and how far to push without doing, you know, more damage. But I now work with literally, I walk my clients through these 5 steps in their own way. And it's pretty incredible to see how helpful it is to have a program almost, right? Imagine being in therapy and having a program that helps you, like you are going through a process. And I think that is one of my criticism of, can I criticize like the world of psychology?
Go for it.
That in a good way, it's constructive. because it's like, you can be in therapy, like, you know, like a lot of people for years, right? But not feel like I'm making a progress where if you know that there is a process, like if I'm seeing you and I'm taking you through this therapy, you're going to go from point one to point two, and you're going to acquire different things. You're going to go through different experiences where you're going to feel better. And I also give my clients a test before, a wellness test, before and after. So I kind of prove to you that going through this process of therapy, you will be able to feel better.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it feels like you're like achieving something as well.
Right.
I'm curious about, you spoke a little bit about writing a memoir in English, which first of all, I'm curious about that. Like, how do you think that you were able to write something in English if you didn't speak the language? Sort of a spiritual thing, huh?
It is a very spiritual thing, actually. And I think that, I don't know if it's the age or whatever it is, but I definitely think that, you know, there's something more than just what we have happening in this world, you know, and there is a, you know, and I think if you're now looking back, I mean, there were so many, you know, like so many things happened that, you know, showed me that, you know, like I was meant to do this. Like I had so many people helping me and guiding me. And, you know, like even just, I look at this big pile of paper and I'm like, how did I write in English? Like I literally was in the Institute of English learning how to, you know, how to write. And I got to college, you know, a year and a half later, somehow I got into a business school for 2 years because I didn't really speak English first. But yeah, it was very incredible to see, And writing for me and for many of my clients is a crucial part, because I think a lot of time, you know, and I rewrote my memoir like maybe 100 times, because when you first write it, it's like, you know, it's in one voice, and then I rewrote it again and again and again. And then now it's less about what happened to me. It's like, okay, this happened to me, but how do I tell this story, right? Like, why, mm-hmm. like, you know, that I feel is like the important thing is like what we tell ourselves is what is really important, because that also allows us to create that change and have the motivation to take steps towards feeling better and achieving our goals.
Definitely. And I think you own a center now on the Upper East Side. Is that correct? Is it fully open? And I mean, not right now, but before COVID, yeah. Have you already opened it and started seeing patients there?
We haven't, but we were supposed to open March 1st. And, okay. you know, like, and then it got pushed to March 14th. And then this, literally the timing was so odd, but
it's a wellness center.
Yeah. So it's, we have about 15, psychologists, dietitians, yoga teachers, like 15 therapists, professionals working in a space in a very holistic way. So I think what was missing for me and for a lot of my clients is to have this physical space that is very community-based. So we have a lot of after-school programs, and we call them like mental fitness, where the whole concept, the whole idea is to destigmatize mental health and promote wellness and to prevent mental illness. So basically the center is for, it starts at age 9, and, you know, where I found a lot of the problems and bullying and like challenges are kind of, you know, starting or are being noticed. And so we have a lot of groups, and we do virtual reality, and we use like art therapy and dance therapy and all sorts of therapies that are cool. We even do like a TikTok positive, you know, where we use like things that people are obsessed with, but we were trying to connect with, you know, young people and, you know, older people too, but, you know, on the preventative side with, mm-hmm. you know, helping them and empower them with the right skills earlier on so that they will have stronger foundations and they will learn to tell themselves different things and to, you know, learn mindfulness and just have the right skills at an early age, which I think is crucial.
Definitely. That's amazing. Yeah. So when you graduated from all of your different like studies, what did you start your own practice? And then now the clients that you have, you're bringing them to your wellness center? Is that?
Oh, no. This is like, first I worked I worked with autistic kids for 3 years.
Okay.
The Jewish board. And then, so many years ago. And then I worked at Teen Screen through Colombia with kids who are at risk for suicide. And then I worked at the Center for the Study of Anorexia and Bulimia for 5 years, where I got my postgraduate training. And I just kind of moved. I think the good thing is like I worked with different people because I wanted to, you know, learn different modalities and have experience with different people. And then I also worked at eating disorder recovery specialist with Greta Gleisner, who I love. And, you know, I mean, and kind of got more experience with the coaching aspect of it. And only, you know, like the private practice, I think, started like, I mean, I've been working on my own for, you know, I've been a therapist for 15 years, but the private practice is about like 7 years. Mm-hmm. But now this is the first wellness practice that, you know, the first physical space that I have with several practitioners. And the goal is to have 5 of them in New York and then in different states and in Israel as well. But yeah, so the private practice is, you know, is not new, but the bespoke wellness partners on Upper East Side is definitely new. And the clients, you know, I work with very specific types of clients. I can only take anywhere about 15 to 16 clients at a time because I do a lot of, it's not just an hour a week. It's a lot of like, I collaborate with a team, and then, you know, I do a lot of, you know, I I communicate with them during the week. I talk to all the doctors and whoever needs to be involved. So it's a very, you know, like solution-based type therapy. And then if they want to kind of delve in and if they want more therapy, then we do that. But I get clients that have tried many types of, you know, they tried other therapists and other treatments, and for some reason it didn't work. So not all of them, but many of them are, you know, very challenging. And then once I kind of get the client and I get all the information from all the different places, we come up with a very specific plan, and it's a very time consuming process, but I love it, and it's very rewarding, and very grateful.
Sounds amazing.
So what is your, first of all, we're both, I'm sure, sorry that the timing was just so,
yeah,
like it really interrupted something that sounds like it's going to be great when it ultimately does open and operate fully. But I'm curious, and I'm sure Sarah's also curious about kind of what your life is looking mm-hmm. like now. Are you seeing patients virtually? Are you working at all with the other practitioners that you were meant to in this physical space? Or kind of what does your work look like right now?
Yeah,
no, that's a very good question. So I work a lot more actually, because we also do a lot of volunteer and a lot of groups for first responders. And, you know, so that, like, I work out of my bedroom, even though my office is literally a block away, so I could, you know, hopefully soon start going there. But yeah, I mean, we still do. I mean, surprisingly, my own clients who've had a lot of challenges are already, because they have the skills and they're kind of like, you know, I always say that, like, I love stress. People are always like, what does that mean? I mean, I thrive on stress. Like, it just motivates me. It's a positive thing, like, for me. And, you know, like, I feel that, you know, now with the virtual support, I could do a lot more groups and have access. I mean, people who don't usually have access to a physical space can join the group, which has been really amazing. So, I mean, I still do my own therapy. I run groups and I collaborate with dietitians and, you know, psychiatrists and doctors. And a lot of it is actually easier in a way, even though I do love the in-person therapy, especially in the group. But it's been very interesting to see how, you know, especially I feel like in the groups, people that don't feel comfortable coming physically to a space or even leaving their home for whatever reason, they can join the group and they don't even have to show their face sometimes, you know, but at least they are putting their foot into a space where they're getting the support. They are seeing that they're not alone, you know?
Right.
And that's been pretty remarkable to, you know, to see how the virtual world, which is, you know, I've done virtual therapy before, but now it's primarily virtual. So it's interesting to see how people are actually finding this very beneficial. And, you know, like, it's very interesting to see that.
Yeah, it's kind of like a stepping stone between,
yeah,
like what, where people might currently be and ultimately making the choice to see people in person. It's interesting because while a lot of us are longing to be able to be around each other, I think the, like, the positive aspects of technology really can't be overstated, because even Sarah and I, like, through our podcast, and we're not therapists, obviously, but people are really affected by the things that we put out, and hopefully, I mean, yeah, a positive way. We've gotten some really nice messages of people starting therapy. So right. I do think while the physical in-person stuff is really important, you know, that those conversations, whether they're digital or not, can still make a really big difference.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. What did you want to say, Sarah?
Oh, I was just going to add that before this whole thing started, I was a little bit nervous about taking my therapy experience from in person to virtual, because I'm so, like, I use my hands when I talk, and I'm very, like, I'm just, like, all about that face to face connection. So I was really nervous about how my own therapy was going to go online, even though I've heard so many great things. But it's really been amazing, and it really, the digital part of it has not impacted, like, my work in therapy at all. Like, it's actually been great. So yeah.
That's very good to know. And, you know, another thing is, like I always say, like, I'm actually training people how to use my coaching program, because it's a very clear and concise type of program. You follow different steps and all the skills are right there and all the worksheets. And So what I've been doing, because we have so many people looking for therapy, and a lot of people cannot afford to pay for therapy. Mm-hmm. What we've been doing is basically I'm training. First of all, we have like 5 interns. So we're able to offer therapy for people, you know, like we call a lot of, you know, if they're not licensed, there are recovery coaches. And even if you don't have a background in psychology, I think that like certain people can become coaches. So, I mean, I think like they've been doing a lot of virtual support, which has been amazing. And I think there is something, and I'm learning more and more every week, but even with like clients looking at me, but also looking at themselves and criticizing themselves and like, what is that about? It's like, it's so fascinating to see that. And, you know, and also like I'm able to share, like, you know, I'm a big believer in like visual things in therapy, because to me, if you just talk about like, oh, it's like your thoughts affect, for example, with cognitive behavioral therapy, like our thoughts affect your emotion and behavior, like to talk about it and to see the actual like cycle of cognitive behavior therapy and how can we break it, there is something very empowering about like visually seeing it. Mm-hmm. So I love to use like visuals when I talk to clients about, you know, the skills that I teach them, and everything is like, I'm not just like, hey, this is a good skill. Like there is evidence that if you as a client work with a therapist, with the right therapist for anywhere from 12 to 36 weeks, like you can change a behavior, you know, according to science, like going to a therapy or coach for anywhere from 12 to 36 weeks, there is evidence to show that you can actually change your behavior if you practice skills for anywhere from 12 to 36 weeks. So I think it's like, I'm very like science. Not, I mean, I'm, you know, I, of course there's a lot of other things, but I feel like if there is evidence that something is working, and I've seen it working for many years with my clients, then I like to encourage that and to, you know, use this in my therapy, because talk therapy, while it's great, you know, you can't just talk and talk and talk for many years. I mean, if you're still dealing with your same challenges, then that means that you are doing something wrong. You know, you have to at least make some sort of a progress within a limited, you know, within a certain time.
I think that's where a lot of people get discouraged too, because they go to therapy and it feels really good to talk about things. And that's absolutely the first step for many people, but it's also like, it has to be work in order for something to get better. And people are understandably afraid of like confronting the things that really challenge them. But therapy is supposed to be like a long-term make things better, and not just like I go in and then feel an immediate sense of relief, because then that only works in the short term.
Right. But I feel like, don't you think that you wish somebody will say that to you? I went to so many different therapists, and you go, and I, you know, and I wanted to feel like, all right, I want some sort of result after 2 or 3 sessions. I want to feel better. Yeah. You know, I want to feel like I'm doing something, but nobody ever told me that there is a process, right? And it takes commitment. Like this is the first thing I tell my clients or their parents, because sometimes they will come for like 2 sessions or 3 sessions and they'll be like, oh, my kid is fine after 3 sessions or 4 mm-hmm. sessions. And then the problem will come again in different points. So I always say it takes commitment, time commitment, emotional commitment, financial commitment. It's a big commitment. Right. And of course, like the emotional commitment is the most challenging one. But once you know that, if you know, okay, like it's not going to be easy, but you know what? It's going to be very rewarding.
Right.
You're going to feel so much better. You know, like, and it takes, like, I feel like the relationship part of it is crucial. Like, we need to trust each other. We need to be, like, I need to be, you know, open to, we both have to be open and honest. And I think another thing is, like, I don't know, like, if that's the mentality, but as, you know, an Israeli, sometimes it gets me into problems. I think good problems sometimes, but I believe in total honor, like I talked to my hand too. Like I think that when somebody's asking me what I think, I'm not gonna, can I say bullshit or no?
Yeah.
I'm not gonna bullshit them. I'm like, I'm going to tell you what I think. You might not like it, and I'm gonna say it in a nice and respectful way, but I'm gonna tell you what I think. And I think, you know, like it's not, we can't like lead people to believe that something is possible, and you know, to mislead the person. Like I think honesty is crucial in a relationship. And I always say, this is a therapy relationship, but what you take from our relationship, you take for other areas of your life. If we're working on regulating your emotions, like, I want to know how you feel about me, I tell you how I feel about you. And this is like, that's how we talk and we work through and we, you know, like, and we were able to move to a better place. And then the therapist client relationship is crucial. And I think I'm not the right fit for everyone, right? But I think, you know, even doing this initial, like, I know who is the right fit for me in terms of a client therapy. And I tell my clients, I interview you for a session or two, sometimes three, but usually I know within like the first, like, you know, I give like almost like an hour phone interview. And I know if it's the right person or not. Like, I don't want to take someone if I'm not the right person. And I think a lot of therapists, you know, like, they don't pay attention to the personality. And I think in my first company, LW Wellness, I have about 150 wellness professionals. And I was, in essence, I'm like the matchmaker of therapists and mm-hmm. dietitians and trainers.
That's cool.
And when people say, oh, but how do you know who is the right fit? Like you see who is in front of you. Like, and mm-hmm. I never look at their resumes before they, you know, of course, we do reference check, we look at resumes, but I think knowing who is the right match for you in terms of therapy is crucial. Like, what is your personality like? Like, if I have a therapist who is more psychodynamically oriented and also she's more quiet and more of a listening type, and, you know, and I have a client who's also quiet, that's not going to be a good match because they're both going to sit down and like be quiet, you know? But if you don't know that, then you end up going to this therapy for months after month after month, and you might not see a progress. You might see a progress, but I think that matching is a very important factor. And, you know, whether you do it virtually or in person is, you know, it's a different story, but I think that matching is like crucial to know and to be able to do.
I think that's a really refreshing take on therapy and one that I don't hear very often, yeah. to be honest, like even from the therapists that I've seen. Because I think, you know, not to be like crass, but while I'm sure many therapists have the best of intentions, there are some people who it's their job. And so they are kind of salespeople when they speak to their clients.
Yeah.
And so I think it's probably partly because you're Israeli and you grew up in a different culture than us. But I do think I know people who are averse to therapy because they're like, you know, they're just going to keep telling me things to bring me back in. And while I think that might not be true for a lot of people, it could be. And so I appreciate like therapists that their goal is really to challenge people and not to just like coddle them and tell them what they want to hear. So they keep coming back and paying you, you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%. And I always tell like my clients, I'm like, my goal is to get you in and to get you out as mm-hmm. soon as possible. And, you know, and I feel they're always surprised. They're like, well, you don't want to continue taking our, you know, like, you don't want to see us, you don't want our money. And I'm like, it's not about the money. It's about my goal is to take you through a process and to help you feel better and more empowered. And once you do, I want you to go out there and go and try it. Yeah. And I'm always, my door is always open. I mean, I have clients that I've seen 5 years ago that I still see once a month just because they like to have that connection and they check in and they feel like, you know, they always go through different challenges. But the point is that the goal is not to have people stay in therapy for a long time. And, you know, and it's and it is interesting because a lot of people, you know, I have someone who was in therapy for 20 years. And he was like, oh, you know, it felt like we were just friends. And like, I felt better just talking to a friend, you know, mm-hmm. but it's like, totally. If that's what you want, that's fine. I mean, I don't want to say like that there are different types of, if that's helpful, that's perfectly fine. I mean, I have a lot of friends and people that I know who go to therapy for years. If that makes you happy and makes you feel good, that's perfectly okay. But if you have a specific challenge, if you want to overcome anorexia, bulimia, body dysmorphic disorder, OCD, or if you have issues that are preventing you, right, from leading a healthier, happier life, and if you've been going to one therapist for a certain amount of time and you don't see a change, don't be shy, don't be embarrassed, go out there. Like, first of all, talk to your therapist about it. I always encourage, like, I go back, tell your therapist what you're feeling, what you're thinking, and then educate yourself. I think it's like a lot of people don't know what type of therapy is good for what disorder. There's so many different challenges that people go through. Like, educate yourself. What is cognitive behavioral therapy? People don't know that. What is, like, if you have X disorder, there is one type of treatment that is better than others. So make sure that that therapist has experience with this modalities before you go see them. And I think people don't know. I didn't know how to do this. Like, I just thought that I'm going and I'm talking about my problems and I will stop binging and purging, but I was still binging and purging like years later. So something wasn't working. But I didn't know to look. I didn't know what to do. I wasn't educated about it. That's why I think it's great that you guys are doing this, because hopefully someone can hear that and, you know, and it might hopefully inspire them to go and look for what is it that I'm struggling with and what is the best treatment. So it's
definitely.
So thank you for doing what you're doing.
Yeah. And thank you for everything that you do in this world and in this community. I think that the thing about therapy is like, or the tough part about therapy is that I used to think like, okay, I'm going to therapy, like I'm going to talk it out and then boom, it's going, like all my issues will be fixed. But once you actually realize that you have to put in all of the hard work, and it's like the therapist can only give you the tools, but then you actually have to go and apply it to your own life. It's scary, but it's worth it. It's a lot of hard work, though. It's hard work. And I mean, in the end, it will change your life and you'll have healthier relationships with other people, whether that be your friends, your significant other, your parents. Like, therapy for me has helped me with my relationships with people. But that's because I actually like am putting in the work, and I'm still putting in the work every day. And it's so hard. And there's no like wake up one day and you're like, all right, well, I had therapy last week, talked it all out, and now I feel great. Like, that's like a quick fix. But what people might not understand is that it really is like day-to-day work.
Yeah, and it's so, I love that you were saying it, because when I have my clients and they're always like, okay, tell us what to do, you know, especially like the younger, you know, college students, they're like, what should I do with this one? What should I do with my parents? And I always tell them, you are the main driver of the car. I am here to help. I'm in the backseat. I'm here helping you to facilitate and to give you the right skills and tools. And I will always be honest with you, but you are the driver. The decision is yours, and what you do with it is up to you. And I think another part of therapy, because therapy is usually not interactive. And I found that, you know, actually with all ages, it is important that there is an interactive piece. So we use a special program to text and interact with our clients. But I think that I see my clients for a full hour, but 45 minutes or an hour a week is not enough. And I agree with you, like, you need to do the work. So mm-hmm. I use TED Talks that are related to what we work on. I use worksheets. We have the workbook, which is, you know, an important tool, because if we work on you learning to, you know, form healthier relationships or learn to be assertive, then I will, you know, say, okay, go in the workbook. There is an assertiveness worksheet. Please do this before we meet next week. And whether they do it or not, it's up to them. I can't force them. They're not in school. But I think that I wish that I had more of a guide as a client, where if I needed to go and express myself to my mom, I would have something like using the I statement, where I actually broke down my conversation and I learned to express myself in a more productive way. I mean, we don't know how. I mean, I feel nobody teaches us as parents, as people, how to relate to each other. There is one simple, it's called the Imago Dialogue. It's a relationship dialogue that I love. And I don't even know if I learned it in, I think we don't even learn it in therapy, but it's based on three simple steps that we take to have healthier relationships. And if we learn how to use it and how to practice it, even though it feels like it's fake at times, we all will have much healthier relationships. And it's three simple steps: mirroring, validating, and compassion. And I feel like things like that we never learn. I love to to teach my clients and to have them practice on their own, because it's crucial to leading a healthier and happier life.
Absolutely. Yeah. It seems like you have a lot of tools in your, It seems like you have a lot of tools in your back pocket and within your practice that are really helpful to people. I guess as we sort of wrap up, I'd love to know if there are resources that people could use, whether it's like, I don't know if anyone in your practice is taking on new people, but regardless, I think I would love to know some of the resources that you think might be helpful for people in general. And of course, during this, like, especially crazy time.
Yeah, no, for sure. So you, for someone who is like dealing with challenges and want to talk to someone.
Yeah, I think both. I think probably we have listeners who may be exploring the option of seeing someone new, even New York people who might be interested in going to your center when it opens back up. But then, of course, we might have people who don't live in New York or who are interested in maybe some of the other resources that you talk about. Like, I don't know if your center has a website or something like that.
Yeah. So we have a website. It's bespokewellnesspartners.com. And if you just, I mean, I feel like there's, you know, it's not just, we have different types of therapists and everybody's trained working, you know, by my karma method. So if anyone needs support, they should reach out, because we also have 10% of all our proceeds. We do pro bono work. We have a mentoring component. So if somebody needs therapy, like, reach out to me, even if it's not through our company, I will be happy to connect them to, you know, other therapists and other resources. And even if they cannot afford to pay, we have, as I said, interns, we have recovery coaches. I mean, I have a lot of my clients who I've seen like 10 years ago who are now learning to use my method, and they are recovery coaches. So even if they're not, like, if they can't get, like, you know, therapy and they can't afford to pay it, like, we will figure out a way for them to get some sort of support. And we have free group supports. We have a lot of, so just have them direct them to our website and they can fill one of the contact form. And there's always a way. You could just Google Limor Weinstein and there is a way to get in touch with us. There's a free number on the website and they can call. And, you know, I will do my best to help them find some sort of support. I'm a connector. I mean, this is like, if you can describe me in one word, it's like, even if it's not me, because I'm only one person, I love to connect people to the right places or people. And I hope that you can come and visit the space when it's finally open.
Definitely.
So many great things. And, like, thank you again so much, first of all, for being here and for talking to us about your story, for sharing.
Yeah, Limor, thank you so much. It's been so meaningful. I mean, both in sharing your story and also in, you know, kind of being able to provide actual tools and resources for people. That's been really great. So it's been a pleasure having you. I'm sure Sarah and I will keep you up to date in terms of when the episode's coming out, so that you can, like, you can listen, you can share whatever, you know, whatever might be meaningful to you.
Yeah, thank you so much. And if you guys have enough people, I'm happy to just talk about the five steps in more depth and share more of the skills and tools. And if anyone wants to become a recovery coach, they can, you know, like, reach out to me. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of amazing people who can, there's a lot of people that want to support and want to help. And, you know, asking is, I think, the first step. And, you know, you talking about it is incredible. I love that you talk about mental health and you destigmatize this whole thing. And it's okay. We all have problems. We're all human. And I'm really, really, like, I'm so grateful that you guys are talking about it in such an open and honest way. It's incredible.
Thank you so much. That means a lot. We'll be sure to provide people with the resources so that they can connect with you, or whether it's you connecting them with someone else. I'm sure that will be really helpful. So thank you so much again.
You're welcome. Have a wonderful weekend.
Take care.
Bye.
So that was our episode with Limor Weinstein. We hope you enjoyed it. She provided some awesome resources, which we can definitely share in the podcast description and on our Instagram. As usual, you can follow us on Instagram at It's Fine I'm Fine Pod, on Twitter at It's Fine I'm Fine PD. You can follow me on Instagram at Liz Height, Twitter Liz Tweets 5. How about you, Sarah?
You can follow me at Sarah L. Sassone, that's N like Nancy, on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter. I don't know why I led with TikTok, but Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, whatever, all the works.
Thank you all for listening. We hope you enjoyed the episode, that you got something from it. As always, our DMs are open. So if you're
safe and healthy,
if you need someone to talk to, we are here.
Yep. And with that, it's fine. I'm fine.
It's fine. I'm fine.
Bye. Bye.